They already know.
Happy New Year, Chief.
Happy New Year.
Okay, if everybody would like to take the seats, we're going to go ahead and get the Land Use Committee meeting called to order. Let the record reflect, we have Councilman Smiley, Councilwoman Kilpatrick and Diller, Councilman Bell, Street, Hollins, and Cartier, and my aide is here taking the notes. Also, we have gotten word that Councilman Powers will not be joining us today. First item on the agenda, Councilman Bell, Resolution 11-187. Councilman Bell.
I make a motion to adopt the minutes of December 6th meeting.
I was going to go through this and then come back to that. What if you like? Go ahead. Motion to adopt the minutes.
Second.
All in favor? No objections. All right. Minutes are adopted. Let the record reflect the council president has joined us. Councilman Bell, back to you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to just take a few minutes this afternoon to go over the some concerns that I have in reference to the roadways and some questions about infrastructure as it relates to the SOAR. And we do have representation from DLDOT here today, and I thank you once again for coming. And I guess I'd like to start off with our Land Use Department, if we could, Mr. Chairman. What I'd like to do is ask Land Use if they could just give us just a brief overview of the county's involvement as it relates to the traffic impact and recommended roadway improvements for this particular project. How do they fit in from the very beginning? We have our own traffic engineer. So what part do we take as far as the county? And then I'd like to, the chair would allow, I'd like to ask the representative, Bill Brockbroda, to come forward from DLDOT. And, you know, I have a number of questions to ask DLDOT. How you doing?
Sure.
Happy New Year.
David Coffer, General Manager. And hopefully everybody's in receipt of the memorandum that I sent to a council on December 22nd, 2011, which answered the questions that were sent to the department on December 14th as it relates to this plan and the technical compliance with the county code. Specifically, the second paragraph of that memorandum basically outlined that the department did require a traffic impact study that was done and dated, reviewed by DLDOT on July 6, 2007. After that date, the applicant revised their plan to create a workforce housing plan, which increased the density. Those numbers were also sent to DLDOT, and the email was received back in July of 2008 that the additional units would not have any additional impact on the road system other than what was already studied and required for improvements as part of the letter of no objection, which we received from DLDOT on November 1st, 2010. On your plan, note 64 outlines what would be required for the road improvements as part of this project. The majority of those road improvements would be required for the plan as it was originally submitted or with the workforce housing units. So in either case, there are road improvements that were required as part of the planning process. They were memorialized on the plan at the direction of DLDOT, and this is what would be completed as part of the project if approved by council.
And let the record reflect Councilman Warner has joined us. Councilman Bell.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, while we have the manager of land use here, Dave, I guess the certification of the plan accuracy was signed by the department on October 14th of 11, and you're referring to item number 64 that says DLDOT improvement agreement for traffic. This gives no specifics as far as the width of the roadway or the shoulders, and I've taken note on other plans that are adjacent to this future plan that it actually spells out 2 11-foot traffic lanes, 2 5-foot shoulders, as well as a 10-foot multi-use type lane on the south side of the other plans. And this plan here, High Hook, sits right in between Baymont and the ponds of Odessa. So I'm wondering if this is our document and it's actually signed for certification and accuracy, why that's not spelled out on this plan?
Well, obviously, the overall improvement, and Vance Neck Road is a bit of a different situation for development because, there are, as you just mentioned, there are two adjacent property owners that also have to do road improvements as part of their project. So there will be requirements done on this road that will be done to the specification of DelDOT. In addition, if you go to note 52, there's also some unique sewer notes that apply to this project, but it also affects the other two projects, and there would have to be other sewer easements and other projects all done in conjunction. So without stepping on what DelDOT may or may not say, basically the road improvements will be done to the DelDOT specification, and it will be with all of these projects in mind for the ultimate road improvements that's necessary for Vance Neck Road. The exact specifications will be done to what DelDOT would have as far as what the right-of-way would be in that section and what would be needed along the entire length of Vance Neck Road. And I'll yield to DelDOT for what their specific requirements would be on any one given section.
But I guess my question is, from the county standpoint, is that isn't it supposed to be recorded on the plan?
No, not necessarily.
Then why is it recorded on the Ponds of Odessa and Baymont, which are two developments, one on each side, and it specifies, okay, 11-foot lanes, 5-foot shoulders, and also talks about a 10-foot multi-use lane that must be put in front of the Ponds of Odessa as well as Baymont, but yet it says nothing about that on the development of High Hook. And so I guess what I'm trying to get through here is that in years to come, as we saw with what occurred down on Fieldsboro Road, is that we should be able to follow these things through. We should be able to not only have documents when we sign things to say that this is what's required by DelDOT standards, but at the same time, something that we can reflect back on when it's not done to DelDOT standards. So I just...
Well, they're all done to DelDOT standards because DelDOT is ultimately responsible for the road system. Everything, and this note again, as it was drafted, was approved by DelDOT. This still refers back to the traffic impact study, which also gives a specificity onto what would be done as part of these road improvements. So if it's a desire to add additional notes saying these are what the road standards are, it's being redundant with what's on other plans and what's in the TIS study. This is just the way this note was drafted and approved by DelDOT.
Well, without being argumentative, I would not say it's redundant. I would say that it's actually, would be something that should be on the notes that we're signing, something that if it's required for two other plans, the frontage of theirs, why isn't it recorded on this particular plan?
But by recording this plan, you're also, by reference, recording the traffic impact study that already says that.
And it says two 11-foot lanes, two 5-foot.
It was a recommendation of DelDOT what would be necessary along that section of Vance Neck Road. Now, what I would envision is, because all these projects will be built in a certain time frame, that all those improvements would be done as one project through DelDOT. You wouldn't see one specific road section improved, then another not improved, then another section improved. That wouldn't make a lot of fiscal sense for any of the developers or for DelDOT to do it that way. So what you typically would see once you get this type of project started is that there would be some sort of escrow funds for all these projects, and one person would do the entire project. Fieldsboro was a different situation where one developer did all the improvements, then DelDOT required other developers to pay back that developer once that improvement was completed. So one developer did undertake that entire project.
Okay. I guess just one final note with the Land Use Department would be that I don't agree that it should not be noted on the record plan. I can't agree when I'm looking at two other plans on the same roadway that one are on each side of it. This is the first plan that will move forward. I think that when we sign documents and we say that this is certifiable, then I would think that we the onus responsibility to at least have those notes put there, to me, seems logical to me. And like I say, if it's an oversight or if it's something that's in another document, then at least refer to the other document and what the requirements were. But I think it just leaves room for doubt in the future when things aren't done to what the standards, what we've agreed to. So.
No, I don't think it needs any doubt whatsoever what's required. And when you refer back specifically to the DelDOT TIS, it does go into a lot more specification. In fact, this plan, for the most part, went into a lot more specification, especially on the workforce housing section, which are actually notes, as I noted in my memo, 39 through 49. On everything that is going on with this plan, so
yeah, and
we're comfortable with the way the note was written, and that this meets all aspects of the New Castle County.
All right. Mr. Chairman, I'm not comfortable with it, and I'm only one, but I think that when you have plans, we take the time to look at these plans, and I'm reviewing all the different notes. Dave is right. It is very specific when it comes to what the requirements of the workforce housing and what's going to be contributed and how it will all work out. I don't disagree with that. This isn't a question about workforce housing. This is a question about two-lane rural road that we're building developments on. And I want to make sure that we don't allow the mistakes that have been made in the past on other roadways. So I agree to disagree.
Also, a little record keeping with the record reflect my co-chair, Councilman Brett has joined us. And Dave, just consistency. Again, what was the reason that it was noted on the other plans, but it's not noted on this, only because did the others do the TIS?
No, all the plans along that road did the TIS. Normally when you get to the point of what's required on the new and the plan, we go by what was discussed during the process and how they referenced the different studies. This plan specifically references the study. DelDOT and I believe the department were both comfortable that the note meant the intent of the process and that the letter of no objection was issued based off the way that note was written.
But if it all points and indicates the same thing, why wouldn't it just be referenced there?
I think ultimately it doesn't make any difference if you specifically reference that improvement or you just reference a study. It's all incorporated into one file. It's just as if you're going through this. This is also referencing the LDIA, but it's not specifically writing out the 30 pages of the LDIA on this document, saying the LDIA is recorded. This is a reference to that document. That becomes part of the plan, as does the landscape plan, as does the construction plans. They're all referenced on these plans back to other plans that become part of the process. So the road improvements would all be done with what was required, not just for this plan, but for the other plans up and down Vance Neck Road as part of the building permits being issued for the site.
Would this be, hence, a product of the planner? Maybe certain planners like to put those notes on the plan and other planners like to reference the TIS?
I think it's just a reference of that's how the note was crafted by this engineering company. DelDOT was comfortable with the note the way it was written for their letter of no objection. The department's comfortable because it's referencing what was required in the 2007 study. And that we're comfortable that all the improvements will be done on Vance Neck Road as part of this project, as is for the other two projects.
But just out of even this inconsistency, you wouldn't want to hence basically have the same notes referencing on the plans just so it's parallel as even as it moves through?
Wasn't the note on the plan critical?
Well, typically the notes are all generally the same because they reference back to the TIS study, which is the improvements.
Right.
I don't think anybody pulled all the plans up and down Vance Neck Road to make sure every note was written identical. Every plan will have a different, slightly different note or a verbiage on it, which is comfortable both to the department and DelDOT. In this case, that verbiage is comfortable both to the department and DelDOT.
Councilman Bell?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I find it interesting that our land use department would not pull plans and take a look at what's written on them. And I don't want to get too argumentative here, but I'm going to tell you, I'm annoyed by this to the standpoint that I took the time, because it's in my district, I've looked at the roadway, I've looked at other roadways and problems we've had, and I've got two record plans here, the Ponds of Odessa as well as Baymont, that says Vance Neck Road improvements, and it's very specific as to what the improvements are to be. The developer shall be required to improve Vance Neck Road along its shared northern and southern site frontage to include two 11-foot travel lanes, two 5-foot shoulders, 10-foot wide multi-use pathway will be built along the south side of Vance Neck Road. Nowhere on the high hook plan that I can see or the signed document of verification does it reference anything like that. And you know, we can come back and say, well, it's not important because the other two developments are going to be required and it's on other notes. These are the documents that we get as council. These are the documents that we look at. And I find it a little troubling that it can't be noted the same so that all three of them developments mirror one another as far as what the requirements is. And, you know, and I have questions with DelDOT as far as the frontage and at what point will the different areas in the curve be improved. But, you know, it's just, it's where I'm coming from.
Sure.
And just to be clear, the department does pull the other plans and will review those other plans as part of the process, because the other plans, depending on where they're at in the process, are committed development or not committed development. It depends on where they're at and how we count them in the traffic counts. But as far as when you get down to the final plan, because every plan is done at a different time in history, the notes may have changed in the code, the word verbiage may have changed. We don't match verbiage, because if that was the case, we'd be matching verbiage from the 1950s. So we do update them. We do work on a level of comfort with what was in the TIS report and what DelDOT required as part of their no objection letter. There is additional work that's done after the plan when they go back to DelDOT to actually get their entrance permits and to get the final road configuration. So the overall Advanced Neck Road will have certain improvements done and developed as a concept for the entire length of Advanced Neck Road. So again, because of what's already outlined on this plan, because we have the letter of no objection saying DelDOT doesn't object to this plan being recorded with the way the note's written, we think it's fine. If a sticky needs to be added to say that there's additional improvements, we don't object to that. I mean, that's really just going back to the engineer asking for that additional direction. But with the detail that's on this plan, the information that's in the file, the road improvements that are necessary as outlined in the TIS would be done as part of the Advanced Neck Road improvements. And the developer, they can speak for themselves, are already committed to the costs associated with that because they agree to those issues as part of their recordation and agreeing to the plan. So overall, the road network along Advanced Neck Road, and that is in the growth area, it has been in the growth area for several years, would be sewered, would have the road improvements, and does meet all the requirements of the county code.
Well, I guess just hypothetically, sponsoring council member would be seeking that level of comfort, you know, to have that verbiage added in there. Where would that come from? Would you be drafting that or bringing it there, or would?
Well, I mean, as long as DelDOT and the developer don't object, we would just ask whatever specific verbiage they thought would be additional to that can be added.
It doesn't matter whether council objects. If the developer and DelDOT are okay with it, the district council person doesn't weigh in at all. I mean, I'm telling you that I'm looking at plans here that are given to us specifically by land use, and they are not accurate. It has no reference to the size of the lanes, and if this development proceeds before the other developments, at what point are those improvements going to be made? And I'm getting more troubled as I sit here to hear the fact that as long as the developer and DelDOT's comfortable, then that's fine. I'm the one that's got to go back and answer to the people of the 12th District and along that roadway, and it says nothing in this plan that we've signed as land use that those particular sizes of the roads will be to those specs. It says DelDOT standards. What is the standard? What is being required? Two plans can have it. One plan doesn't need it. I don't understand it.
Well, let me just be clear for the record, because I do take exception to you saying that this plan doesn't comply with county code. I signed this plan. This plan was referred back to the Department of Land Use on two occasions now. On October 31st, when I signed the plan, and on December 22nd, when I responded back to the plan, I'm saying that this plan does meet the criteria of the county code as it's outlined on what our responsibilities are through this process. So to say,
not saying it doesn't meet the code, Dave, I'm saying that it doesn't have the notes on the plan of what the requirements of DelDOT are. And there's two other plans, one of each side, that do.
But I'm saying that it says the DelDOT standards, refers back to the TIS, that meets the requirements of the state and the county code. If you want more specificity, I don't object. I can't put it on here myself because I can't change the notes on the plan. That has to come from what the developer would have to put back on the plan, because they're certifying as the owners, they're responsible for that. And I wouldn't have them put a note on there saying they're only going to put an 8-foot shoulder on if DelDOT didn't object. So while I'm saying we need their concurrence, I couldn't go back and put a note on the plan that then would be in conflict with either what DelDOT would require or the developer required. That's why they're both in the room and I'm asking them that. The bottom line is, both on October 31st, on December 22nd, I'm certifying to Newcastle County Council that this plan meets the criteria of the county code for recordation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Councilman, I think the developer has a couple comments. Would you like to entertain those at this point now, or? Mr. Tucker, did you have a couple comments?
Just a couple things to clarify that may be helpful. Councilman Bell and the rest of council. Chairman and Councilman Bell are okay with that, or I can wait. It's your pleasure.
You can give your comment, sure.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Councilman Bell. Just for the record, my name is Sean Tucker. I represent the applicant today. And to be crystal clear, we certainly want to address any concerns that Councilman Bell or other members of council have. Was not aware of the concern over the specificity of the notes until now, and it's certainly a fair point for any member of council to bring up now or even a week from now. So we understand this is part of the process. Let me say this. I think from land use's perspective, land use's role is to look at whether the plan complies with code or doesn't comply with code. And that appears to me to be the role and the proper role that they've taken in regard to this application. The question about going beyond the code or wanting greater specificity than is in the code, that's certainly a prerogative of council. And I can tell you, my client has no problem whatsoever adding that specificity that Councilman Bell, you're asking for today. That is not an issue. In terms of making sure that the county is protected, which I think Councilman Bell certainly has an obligation to make sure of, the standard notes on the plan, and I'll point council in particular to notes 58 and 64, require that my client satisfy all DLDOT regulations, whatever they may be. And part of this process, and it's a bifurcated process, is land use reviews for UDC compliance and DLDOT reviews for subdivision, street, and other road compliance issues that are regulated by DLDOT. There's an entrance permit that will come down the pike before my client can break ground. That entrance permit typically has the much greater detail that I think is being sought today. That doesn't mean it can't be shown on this plan. It can, but there is this other road, this other path that DLDOT follows where an entrance permit has to be obtained. We've not received that yet. It is not uncommon to wait until post-record plan to receive an entrance permit approval. We have received our no objection approval, which allows us to go forward to this stage. So in a nutshell, all I'd like to say to help clarify things is that, Councilman Bell, we will address your concern with an additional note on the plan to spell out some of the things that are required here by reference to DLDOT regulations, but not spelled out with specificity. But also to clarify that land use, at least in my opinion, has done its role in that the standard notes are on the plan that say DLDOT regs have to be satisfied. So we have to do that. This plan currently legally obligates us to do that in the three notes that I reference. So I hope that helps clarify some of the concerns. And again, Councilman Bell, it certainly is your district, and we want you to have additional comfort levels as you may require, and we'll prepare those additional notes between now and next week's meeting.
Thank you. Councilman Bell.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I'm not going to belabor this thing, but if something is specific on two out of three plans, and it's specific on a number of plans that we see, I don't know what the big deal is over making it specific on the plan of High Hook. There's things in there and questions that I'll have for DLDOT as far as this particular road. And, so I don't see what the problem is with not having it on there. And when we sign a document and say it's certified, I'd like to know what we passed and what we're looking at. So with that, Mr. Chairman, if I can indulge the patience of council, I'll try to make this as quick as possible, but to get some of the answers, if we could possibly have the representative from DLDOT, here with us.
Absolutely.
Bill? Once again, I want to thank DLDOT for attending and being here with us.
And I do, too, and also want to remind everybody that DLDOT is here as our guest, so let's treat him accordingly.
Thank you, Councilman. I'm Bill Brokenbrook, County Coordinator for DLDOT. With me is Bud Friel from our Community Relations section.
Mr. Chairman, what I'd like to ask is the same thing of DelDOT. You know, the primary responsibility of the roadways, as we know, falls within DelDOT. I'm not sure that the county shouldn't have a little bit more oversight of some of the, you know, some of this, these things that are put before us. In fact, it's been done in the past by this council, and it might be something we want to take a look at in the future. But, Bill, if we could, just a brief overview as to the overall road improvements that are being recommended for High Hook, and what's being recommended, as well as, you know, the neighboring properties. And I could probably give you a few more of the questions so, you know, you can kind of roll through them. But, you know, is it in fact two 11-foot lanes, two 5-foot shoulders? A 10-foot on the south side of Antoinette Road was referred to on two of the plans as a kind of like a Maldi use type path. That was the first time I had seen that. And with this plan, will the improvements be made just in front of High Hook at the time, keeping in mind that Baymont is to the west, the Ponds of Odessa is to the east? So I'm trying to get some ideas to what the process is, what do you look at, and are these the recommendations that DelDOT is making?
And just a reminder for all speakers as we get started, for the benefit of the recording, just please state your name before you speak, so we have it officially.
Bill Broken, Road Department of Transportation. The traffic impact study for High Hook outlined a number of improvements, or our review of that study did, to be more correct. There's an intersection improvement at US 13, Bayview, and Graylag Roads, which has since been done, but we will require the developer to contribute to that. A signal agreement needs to be entered for that intersection. Improvements to Vance Neck, well, I'll come back to the improvements to Vance Neck, because that's where the bulk of our discussion will be. A signal agreement will be required for the intersection of Bayview and Vance Neck Roads. And I think those are the ones that are removed from this, the area of the site. Along Vance Neck Road, we are requiring all three developers to build the 11-foot lanes, 5-foot shoulders, and 10-foot multi-use path, as you described. When we built the north-south portion of Vance Neck Road, we built it with wide shoulders, which stop at a 90-degree curve. We'll be requiring all three developers to contribute to improving that road from the curve over to the Baymont Woods frontage. Baymont Woods would be the lead developer in that improvement, but the other two will contribute. Each developer will be responsible for improving their frontage. Will it all occur at once? Hopefully, probably, but I don't think we can guarantee that at this point. Certainly, it makes sense for that to happen.
Does the curve itself have any recommended improvements?
You mean, for instance, the radius of the curve? No.
Okay, so the curve would stay the same. And I guess from a standpoint of when you do a TIS and you look at a roadway for improvement, do you physically go out there and take a look at the existing road, what its condition is, what its shoulders are, if there's swales, if there's drop-offs, is there...
At the traffic impact study stage, there is a field review. We make a general note of the width and have some idea of the conditions. At that point, plans are not developed. They have yet to be developed. So I couldn't tell you where along the existing edge of road the improvements would start. You know, we look longitudinally down the road, say, approve from this point to that point, exactly where within the right-of-way the improvements will be done has yet to be determined.
Okay. And from the standpoint of those improvements, it's kind of an after-the-fact, I guess. You come up with the standard of the roadway that you're going to build, and if you take a look at existing trees in front of people's homes that have been there for a long, long time, if you take a look at various parts of the road that actually drop off, there is no shoulder or no swale there or anything. All that's done after the fact. In other words, as far as planning for the roadway to be safe and to have the necessary shoulders, how do you determine if a 5-foot shoulder will even be able to be put there? And the reason I'm asking this is because I ride that road. I went down over the weekend and rode it again and took a look at different areas in front of where the development's going. And then when you say from the curve down to where Baymont would be, it's an established community area. The roadway is what it is today. There are no shoulders. And then you're at mailbox and, basically, if I got it right, is that you're talking full-grown, long-grown trees that have been there for years that are on both sides. So how does all that fit into the plan? And it's an education process, but it's also something that we get asked, I get asked, because we're in a growth zone. But at what point, how is all that decided?
Determined between DelDOT and the developer's engineer. Plans have not been developed yet. If I had to guess, I would say probably we will try to save the trees on the north side. The legislature has asked that we, where possible, require a right-of-way from the developer rather than from others, and that's certainly a reasonable thing. Where there's a development on one side and
right,
not a developer on the other side. So I would guess that the widening would be to the south side, more or less entirely, but that hasn't been determined yet.
Okay. And just for your general information, as a district council person, both the north and the south side are lined with trees, and it's right up against the property lines.
I've been there.
Yeah. And one of my concerns was that you have from the opposite side of the ponds of Odessa, there's no footnotes calling for any improvements out to Delaware Route 9. So what you have is an older antiquated rural road that will come into two 11-foot lanes, 5-foot shoulders, and then if in fact that area around the curve cannot be improved, then you're dropping back into a smaller road with no shoulders and everything. So, and I'm asking the questions ahead of time because And I know what we say as the county, we have authority over and everything else, but we don't ask the questions. We don't try to, get ahead of the cart here. You know, are these going to be problems that other homeowners are going to have in the future? Because no one's really taken a look at it.
Again, this is Bill Brokenbrook. For the record, we were requiring Tides of Silver Run and Ponds of Odessa to overlay Van Snack Road east of Ponds of Odessa, actually east of the Tides of Silver Run, out to Route 9. With the Tides of Silver Run having expired, we may drop that requirement. But again, if they come back, well then.
When it brings up an interesting point is that by them, expiring, something that was going to be required may not be able to be completed now because one of the plans have dropped out. Just a couple more questions, and they are sycamore trees. Your folks kind of went after the fact. You determine like what the traffic impact is. Do you look things like agriculture, farming along the roadway, heavy farming equipment, things of that nature. You know, you take that in consideration with traffic impact and what size road, because it's nothing during the right season to get behind a combine, okay, or the school buses that can't go into the developments and stop along the rural roadway. And my point's getting back to the same thing, that, you know, rural roadways, and not in all cases, can they be improved to DLDOT standards, and without, I would imagine, significant removal of properties and trees and everything. So, I don't know. I mean, I've got folks that are asking me questions that live along Vance Neck Road, and I'm just trying to do the research, get the information so I can get back. And
okay, for the record, this is Bill Breckenbrough. We do try to account for agriculture. We had a lesson in that in Middletown with a roundabout, you may recall. We had to do some redesign there. That's an unusual case. Our typical 11-foot lanes and 5-foot shoulders are, as far as we know, generally sufficient for agricultural vehicles. Traffic impact studies are based on traffic counts. So if farm vehicles were counted, they would go into the calculations as heavy vehicles, assuming they were like combines and that sort of thing. There generally, in most places, isn't enough of that traffic at peak hours to show up in a traffic impact study. My impression is that farmers generally try to stay off the road during busy traffic hours.
All right. Just in closing, Mr. Chairman, I guess I learned something about the system each time that I asked the questions and whatnot, but, you know, it's kind of this thing of the whole letter of no objection and, allowing folks to proceed with development and everything. A lot of the things that our transportation system does is after the fact. And so, you know, I don't know how we can all come together and maybe improve the system. But it seems to me as though, you know, we're setting a path forward. We're allowing the development to occur when we really don't have a design for the transportation piece of it. And, it's one thing to do traffic impact studies and vehicle counts, who will travel the road. But all the things that I've noted here are important. And all the things that I've noted and talked about here are on that roadway and will affect, people's safety, will affect people's lives as far as their properties, as far as trees and things that have grown for years, agriculture. So I guess I'm answering my own question to one extent, is that they do a TIS, they give a letter of no objection, we proceed, and we deal with the problems after the fact. I don't think it's the best way to do it. I think there ought to be a little bit more oversight and input into traffic plans and development and everything, so that the infrastructure is put in and it's proper and it's there. So, Bill, I want to thank you very much. I don't know whether any other council have any questions. I'm sorry for taking so much time, but it's important to the folks that live along this roadway.
You're welcome. We have additional questions from members of council? Mm-hmm. Councilman Cartier?
I don't have a question of our DLDOT representative here, but I go back to the county code and to what Councilman Bell is bringing forward, that, you know, we're constantly told that one of the breakthroughs of the Unified Development Code, the progressive features, was concurrency of infrastructure. And I don't know if Dave Culver could answer that, just to give us some perspective on what that, you know, code requirement is, and, you know, this issue of doing a letter of no objection in advance, planning the actual improvements later, how does that necessarily go along with concurrency of infrastructure? What if you can't, as you said, improve a road to the standard that you would, it was implied in the approval that we gave initially? So I was just wondering if Dave Culver could kind of go explore that issue with us.
Sure, Dave Culver, General Manager. The issue on concurrency is that the letter of no objection is basically saying they're going to meet concurrency with those improvements. If they can't make those improvements, then they're not going forward even after they record the plan, because they still are required to make those improvements as part of the planning process. So depending if you're commercial or residential, if you're commercial, you don't get a building permit unless you have that entrance permit and there's improvements spelled out. And normally on the residential, you don't get a building permit until those improvements are done. Commercial, you do your C of O, because that's normally concurrent with the overall project. But so, if you don't meet concurrency on every aspect of the code, A, you don't get recorded, and you go back to Article 5 and it tells you what to do if you don't meet concurrency, how you can get recorded with notes. B, you don't get building permits or permission to go forward with your project until you meet those concurrency. And that's just not roads. That's your sewer, your water, your schools, and all your natural resources. So when you go through this whole land development process through the entire UDC, it's basically telling you what you need to a minimum standard. I mean, you know, what you have to do to meet the county code. Now, in this case, level of service D has to be met through the process. What they're doing through that TIS will meet the level of service D. Now, can you always do more improvements or better improvements or different improvements? Sure, some projects will do that and they'll bring it up to a higher level of service, but that's a minimum standard. So you're running that race both to get recorded. That's part one. Part two is to get your building permit or your C of O, and that's when you're doing the rest of the DLDOT entrance permit and the other work. So a lot of times you don't see all that specific road design work for the entire system until you actually get a plan recorded. Then you go back to the engineering division of DLDOT and you get the rest of that based on the DLDOT standards. And as thick as the UDC is and the drainage code and everything else is in Newcastle County, you got three volumes of DLDOT standards you're meeting when you're developing a road standard. It's just a unique situation in Delaware that the state owns all the roads, except for a couple of municipal roads. But in most states, you have a shared county, municipal, and town, and state responsibility. Here, it all goes back to DLDOT, so we have to yield those issues back. So they're telling us through their letter of no objection, it's meeting concurrency with these improvements, and then through their entrance permit, they're showing the actual design to meet the standards of DLDOT.
I guess the other question I have is, timing-wise, when do road improvements become realized? You know, we got a rural road, have a record plan for a major development subdivision. When does the road improvement come along? At what stage of the development process is the road improvement usually put in place along the rural or road that, you know, these developments feed into?
Well, for residential, it's typically all the road improvements are done prior to the issuance of a building permit.
Prior to the permit.
For example, Odessa building National, permit. I think, was 2 or 3 years in the process for the improvements of Fieldsboro Road before they pulled their first building permit on that project. Now, commercial is a little different because normally commercial permits normally have the XL and DCL is all part of the overall commercial, so it's normally C of O for the commercial, but you still have to have your approved drawing from DLDOT before you get the building permit.
Okay, thank you.
Councilman Street.
I just have a question in terms of what I think I heard you say in process in general. In your presentation, I thought you said that the request for traffic study was done in 207. Traffic study was done in 208. And the letter of non-objection was done in 2011. Somewhere in that vicinity.
Yeah, 2012.
So we're 3 years in. You do it in 08 and we receive the letter of no objection 3 years later.
A major land development plan by county code can have up to 5 years to get approved. When you do your TIS, that basically vests your traffic at that point in time. So you're studying everything that's committed development within that time. So unless the plan expires, and something else happens and you resubmit, normally your TIS, as is your Army Corps, any other regulatory approval, is good through the length of the plan. If the plan expires and you start back from scratch, you then have to go back and you may have to restart the whole area. So when this plan came in 2006 or 2007, that's when their TIS was scoped. It took the committed development into effect. It starts through the process. Now, any plan that came in after this plan was submitted on the same road will then have to count this plan as their committed development.
Okay, but I'm just... I know folks in the table have studied this and do this far better than I do. But at the end of the day, basically, we're 4 years later saying we didn't study it and now we're approving it. And so if whatever transpires in that particular area, in that community, within that 4 years, it doesn't matter? I'm just trying to understand.
That's fundamentally true, because when you submit a plan, you're vested into the code at that time. You study the known development that's committed in your area. Anything that comes in after you that would change the assumption of that traffic study you did would be accounted in the next traffic study. Because a plan takes, and again, this is partly regulatory, this is partly up to the owner, can take 4 to 5 years to get recorded. But you start out in that plan, you're basically vested in under that section of code that plan.
Okay. My second question, and again, this is sorry to hold up everybody's time, just in terms of a process. But if I tell you, if DelDOT tells me that I got to build 6 lanes down this in this particular area, and it's got to be 3 miles long and partially paved with gold, and I say, okay, at what point in time do you make me prove that I can actually do that?
When you're recording your plan, you're certifying that you're going to pave that road in gold. After you record the plan, you say, I'm not going to do it, then you're not basically getting any more approvals through the county or the state. So you wouldn't get any building permit. You would do no more progression on that plan. There have been plans recorded, especially in the mid-90s and late 80s, along Route 40, where small office parks, 20, 30,000 square foot office parks, were told to build a whole new lane on Route 40 as part of their deed restrictions. They obviously could never do it because it was never economically viable, and they would come back and they would change over time. But that was a commitment that was made at the time. And plans were stopped in the process because the amount of improvements necessary were beyond that developer's capability, and they would sit and wait for other developers to get together before they would do that. But the way the code is written, for better or worse, when you come in, do your traffic impact study, or whatever other studies that are necessary, you are committing as part of your land development plan to do those improvements. It's just, and I don't want to go too far off on a workforce housing plan, but when you commit to a workforce housing plan, you're also committing to all the deed restrictions and the price points and everything else that are required by code unless the code changes. So those are things that you're agreeing to as part of the development process in order to get your administrative approval. And I think we've had this debate in front of council before that sub-regional studies or mass TIS studies that would assume population growth and development growth off a property is probably a better way of doing traffic planning in the long term. And we've been meeting with DelDOT. In fact, we're meeting again, I think, Thursday to discuss in some more details for doing land development in the state and specifically Newcastle County. But the current system is you come in, you count your 3 intersections, generate your traffic counts, and that's what DelDOT reviews, and that's what they tell us has to be improved. And that's just how it's been done since the mid-80s, for better or worse.
I understand that. So. My question is, maybe I didn't communicate well. They tell me to pave in gold. I say, okay, I'm going to pave in gold. When do you determine whether or not I got gold money to be able to actually pave it?
Whether or not you have the gold money or not, if you sign the plan saying you will pave it in gold, you don't get any building permits or other approvals from Newcastle County until the road is paved in gold. And if you can't pave it in gold, then you don't go forward with your project. And you sell it to somebody else who has money, or the project eventually will go 5 years and it would sunset under county regulations, which means you'd have to be reauthorized.
And Dave, isn't there some bonding in there too that DelDOT has the ability to pull if you don't come through on your promises?
Your bonding is... Again, I'll view back to DelDOT. When you do a project through Castle County, you are bonding that project to do the improvements on site. So once you start that project, and this is after DelDOT, and you fail to deliver whatever was in your land development improvement agreement, we can pull your bond and we can fix it to the point of it being code compliant. With DelDOT, you put up a road bond when you start your project. If you're going through that project and for some reason you fail to live up to the aspects of that road bond, then DelDOT can pull the road bond and finish the project. And that road bond is based off the value. So if you're paving this in gold and that's what you're bonded for and you don't finish it, you put up a bond that DelDOT's going to pull and finish that road in gold.
Does the same thing apply if I say I'm going to build a Taj Mahal next to that road? Is there a point in time when you make me prove I can actually build the Taj Mahal?
The proof of you building the Taj Mahal or not is you're putting up a bond with Newcastle County on the approved site improvements. You're putting up a bond with DelDOT. You're showing us architectural designs that we are going to hold you through in that process. If you don't build to those architectural standards, then you're not going to get your final CFO. The Sheraton comes to mind as somebody who showed us an architectural plan and didn't build to it. So when you come in through that process and you show us all that, yes. Now, if you have a deed restriction or something else on that property saying this is how I'm going to build this project, then we can hold you up to that actual faith and that footprint. But whether or not you have the wherewithal,
and then you just made my point for me, okay? Because if I tell you I'm gonna build that Taj Mahal, and I make it look like the Taj Mahal outside, but it's actually a red barn inside, you don't know that till it's already built. Now it's a problem for everybody.
Well, we do know that it's going to be built because the plan inside can't be a red barn. They want it to be a code compliant plan inside.
Not according to what I'll go to school on everybody else. I'm gonna keep on going to school and everybody else at the time, but you made the point I was trying to get to, okay, and it's already happened. And what I'm gonna be looking at going forward is what do we do to prevent future occurrences?
Councilwoman Diller?
Councilman Bell, is part of this the issue that has gone on with Fieldsboro Road where there were supposed to be two 11-foot lanes and 5-foot shoulders, and it was clear after the road was built that the shoulders were nowhere near 5 feet.
That
right?
is correct.
Okay. So basically we have a situation where, you know, you're trying to make sure that what is supposed to be built gets built. And we're in the situation where we can't make DelDOT make sure that those shoulders are the proper width.
However, we're hearing that DelDOT has the authority to take bonds
exactly.
finish the road to what it should have
exactly
been.
And that was not part of the discussion on Fieldsboro Road when it was very clear that road was not built to the 5-foot shoulder specifications. Yes, yep. Exactly.
Mr. Chairman, if a road is not built to DelDOT standard and they approve it,
yeah,
then that's also another problem.
Yeah.
But if they inspect it after it's been built and it's not within their standards, then I think what's being said as far as bonds, I would think that they would have every right to turn around and pull bonds and have it corrected. But you know, I think it all goes back to the fact, and you got community relations or public relations here from DelDOT, folks are concerned because people talk to people in communities and they hear some of the problems that occur. And there's folks that live along this roadway that are questioning how this is all going to happen. If you travel down that roadway today and you looked at both sides and you get in your mind that it's two 11-foot lanes, two 5-foot shoulders, and a 10-foot multi-use path, I don't know where they're going to build it. And I don't think that they're going to be able to expand the roadway up there where, you know, the curve comes down before the development. But that's just my layman's review of it. I mean, I am not an engineer, nor do I know what the cost is or anything. But I think there's too much emphasis being on kind of giving a green light, saying what it's supposed to be, and then it doesn't end up being what it's supposed to be.
And hence, I think that boils down to where it comes back, you know, here, where we're left at this process where, in a sense, you know, DelDOT you know, is the keeper of the roads. They own them. They're responsible for them. They are a multi-million dollar department. They have the programs, the models, you know, and all the traffic studies, and hence that's where they're at, and that's their job. And I guess, in a sense, if a road, you know, if the road's supposed to be 16, I have no clue of these, so I'm just making them up here. But if it's supposed to be 16 foot, if DelDOT comes back and says, you're right, you can't do that, it's going to be 14 foot, then hence that's DelDOT standard. That's what they've said too. That's the models they've used and the projections they've used for the traffic analysis on that road, and that's what they've come up to, and that's what they've agreed to with that developer. I guess hence where it's hard for us to sit here and say, no, you're going to hold you to a 16 foot. You know, we don't own them, we don't build them, and we're not the keepers of them. So it ultimately boils back over to DelDOT.
And again, on the DelDOT side of it, for example, in Fieldsboro, the road was completed, DelDOT accepted the road, and the bond was released. And I'm not sure if you guys keep a warranty on them or not. In Newcastle, after your project is complete, we keep your bond 20% of it for 3 more years before we release the rest of that bond. That's our warranty against defect on the Newcastle County side of it. I'm not sure if there's a warranty against defect on the DelDOT side. But that's... But the difficulty we get into is Newcastle County does not have jurisdiction in state right-of-way. The Newcastle County is a partner with DelDOT through the process that once it's improved, once DelDOT tells us it's their standards, that's when we go ahead and we issue permits or other things occur. At that point in time, if the developer comes in and goes defunct or he doesn't have the wherewithal that Councilman Street was saying, then that's when we have some authority on the property to go in and correct things versus whether or not that developer goes defunct and the project just sits there. And we're seeing these type of issues, as I said before, in front of this council on some subdivisions and on some projects that are getting to a point where the person that may have had the wherewithal 5 years ago may not have it today to do the project, and the project's not starting. And we've seen that in the downturn in the number of projects we received, the length it's taken to record a project, and the time it's taken to build a project after it starts. So, I mean, there are a lot of moving parts within the land development process. But that's why we have a team of inspectors on our side that are out there looking at these projects and making sure that we don't get another chair or tin as it is now, and making sure that when they do show us a plan, they're certifying that is what they're building in the field.
And I think Bill pointed to that in his presentation where he said, you know, basically he's got a, you know, basically when they sit down and look at it, in a sense he's got a full puzzle. But if for some reason a couple pieces get pulled out of it, it sends them back to the drawing board to evaluate what they have to do. Because if somebody's supposed to build one-fifth of a turning lane because they're, you know, one-fifth of a, you know, the projects on the road, well, four of them go defunct, you can't require the one to build the whole thing now. So that hence they go back, and plus there's not as much traffic. So it's an evergreen document, I guess, in a sense, or something there at DelDOT. I don't know.
Well, it's always a timing issue with development on... When you build the road or you build the infrastructure, do you actually have the demand for development? So you would have developments today that may have put in infrastructure 7 years ago, but they're certainly not building any units there because there's no demand for it. So we require things to be brought to a level of service or a sewer to be available or whatever. Yet that subdivision is not being built. So we did put money into infrastructure, county, state, or private developer that may not be being utilized, but didn't really time out when that thing should have been done. I think subregional studies actually solves a lot of that issue for roads, but there's still sewer in schools and other issues.
And you'll solve all that on Thursday, right?
This month or next month.
Okay. Any questions from members of the public? Seeing none, turning to the next item on the agenda, falls under Council District 1.
That'd be me.
One.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'd like to thank our guests for coming up from...
Thank you very much.
Mr. Freely, you didn't get to say anything. I hate that you made this whole trip and you haven't been able to engage this process. Is there anything you'd like to add before you leave?
No, I'm fine. Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Wise guest. Bill, good work, Bill.
Yeah.
Good work there.
Yes.
Okay, what this is a plan to Metro Business Park, and if anybody's familiar with the Metro area, it is down there by Christiana Hospital, and there's a shopping center down there, and it has Old Churchman's Road in the back, and that'll be your back entrance to a couple of your stores and to the Home Depot. That's part of it where it comes out, and that's basically where the entrance is going to be. Going into the business park, and the light industrial area where they're going to be putting a parking garage too. They've done some stormwater management, and it will help the area in the back of the homes that are still left in the area, and it'll also help across the road where the surgery center is, the homes back in there. It'll help that area, and I believe we have somebody here from Vandemarca Lynch. If anybody has any questions. And the chair's not here. You can get up and explain a little, Steve.
Okay, glad to answer any questions, but I don't know.
Please state your name for record.
Steve Johns with Vandemarca Lynch. And I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Well, go ahead, take off. Just explain.
I've been talking for a long time about this, and I don't think you want me to do that.
And just explain a little bit about it, and so the council will get an idea.
It's a the project has a long history. We've been working on it for a long time. It's consists of a number of buildings which have options to be used in many different ways. The owner is not sure exactly how they will be used yet. There's an entrance to the facility from Old Churchman's Road, and then there's a private drive that runs through to the frontage road off of Old Route 7. And there's an entrance there. And we did find some sand beds beneath the site, and so we have designed a stormwater management system that actually takes quite a bit of the stormwater, even up to the 100-year storm, and puts it into the ground and infiltrates it into the ground rather than have it run off the site. So especially on the smaller storms, it will basically eliminate the stormwater that runs off this property and significantly reduce the water that runs across Route 4 to those properties by the surgery center. And also reduces the water that runs behind the properties off of Old Churchman's Road. There's a ditch that runs behind the hotels there, and that floods quite a bit. I'm not going to say we're reducing that flood, but we're theoretically reducing that flood, the flooding in that situation also.
He's not here. I'll take off. Good. Any questions?
I just wanted to talk about, you know, infiltrating stormwater facilities. It's not really very typical. How do you deal with the water quality going into the infiltration bed?
All of the water, before it's infiltrated into the ground, goes through one type or another of a DENREC-approved stormwater quality facility. For the most part, they're the infiltrators, and it's all filtered before it goes in. We have some bioretention basins as well as some filter strips on the project also to clean the water before it goes into the ground.
How deep do you go to get into a permeable layer there?
The basins are fairly deep, I'll say 10 feet deep.
Mm-hmm. That's not very deep. Interesting. Thanks.
Any other questions? Councilor Street?
This additional building.
I'm sorry?
This additional building in that area?
Yes.
Yeah.
And additional impervious ground?
That's correct.
And it's in a floodplain? It already flooded?
We're not building in the floodplain
at
all.
No, there's not a floodplain.
There's a piece of the property that's in the floodplain, but we're not actually... We've limited the building in the floodplain area, and we've actually taken a large portion of the property that drains towards that floodplain, and we've reversed that stormwater, and we put it into these infiltration beds, and we're infiltrating that water into the ground. We're taking water out of the floodplain.
The property down below where the hotel's already built, and then there's another one where Carlisle Boat used to be, that's going to be another hotel in the future, and that area down there gets more water than this area.
And all I'm respectfully questioning is, if you're going to build and you're going to add impervious ground either in or right next to a floodplain, I don't see how it doesn't do anything to make flooding worse.
Well, none of the water from the impervious surface flows into the floodplain area. It all flows away from the floodplain. We've taken the grounds and we're taking the water. Most of the water that flows into that floodplain area actually comes from across Old Churchman's Road from the development over there and down a ditch that runs alongside the hotels. And that's really where most of the water is coming from. Where we are behind that, we're taking this water and it actually flows over towards Route 4 and the road that goes along the surgery center. We're actually taking all that water and we're putting it into the ground. We're not allowing very much water to flow off the site in any direction.
I do know that we had a problem down there a while back, and I went down there with our engineers, and they found that there was a couple supposedly storm water areas that the shopping center was supposed to have taken care of, and the pipes weren't connected. They had one pipe here, and the other pipe was over here. They're supposed to be connected. So what happened, it overflowed and went in, and it was going on to the people's property. Since then, it's been corrected. But that's coming from, there's also the road, when they built the road over going towards the hospital, that was built up higher, and the water comes down. It comes down into the shopping center area.
Your district, all I'm just suggesting is, I think it'll make, it can't help a flooding situation, and instead of now taking an hour to get past hospitals, doing traffic, rush hour, I guess it'll be an hour and a half. That's all right, flooding and traffic, none of my business, not in my district.
Any other questions?
Miss Carlisle Boots.
Yeah. Should have been there. Should have stayed there, huh?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Where are we going? Council, we need to go to the public.
Would the council go to public?
Anybody from the public have any questions? Okay, thank you. Next item on the agenda is Councilwoman Kilpatrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jim Smith and Wendy Danner are here today in case we have any questions. This complaint came to me from some constituents who have neighbors who have bamboo. Some of the bamboo on the side adjacent property was planted prior to our ban. On the back of this gentleman's property, it was planted after our ban. Even though it was planted after the ban and we found the PVC pipes that were in the buckets with the dates on them, there was no enforcement. So this gentleman's property, and I understand there are several other people in the same situation in Councilman Sheldon's district, this gentleman has bamboo that is invasive coming onto his property from the back adjacent property and onto his property from the side, to the point that it's coming under his asphalt driveway and popping up his asphalt. So he asked if there was any way that there could be enforcement, and under the code that we had, there isn't. It just says that you can't plant it. There's nothing about existing bamboo. So this ordinance basically adds to the property maintenance code telling us how we can plant bamboo, where the barriers have to be that keep it from invading onto other properties. We tabled this at one point because we were having discussions on enforcement. The assumption is, and Jim, correct me if I'm wrong here, but the assumption is when you tell them how it has to be planted, if it isn't planted that way and it's invading another property, you can make them at least go back in and put in the barriers that are needed. I guess the question that I still have is, what do we do about the property that has been invaded?
Jim Smith with the Department of Land Use. To answer your question, and just to clarify in the beginning, we do have very limited regulations in the property maintenance code, but they're subjective, and they only talk about when you have a quantity that's in such a volume or size that it's injurious to another neighborhood, to another neighbor's property. So that doesn't give us too much to go on. That's why more meat was needed and how to regulate it. if they, if we do get a complaint and it's found that it is damaging another property, we can go back, if this is approved, and make them put in the proper barrier to ensure that it won't further go in. But it, but if it's already extending over the property, it would have to be removed and eradicated so that you could install a proper barrier. Again, unless you go right through the rhizomes, which are the roots that extend out very quickly for the running bamboo, you're, it's just going to keep growing towards the other neighbor's property. So it, can we force someone to go on someone else's property? No. So it might be, at that point, a civil action between the person whose property has been damaged and the person whose bamboo has damaged that property. It would just be a trespass issue, and they'd have to go to court probably for any damages for that. But we can go back in if we prove from the person who's complaining, and we trace it back to that other person's property, we can cite them and say, it is your bamboo that has invaded. You're not in compliance with county code. It's also illegal under the state law to have bamboo grow across the property line, but it's very difficult to prove. So this gives the code enforcement group a little bit of meat under the county to clarify our law, and then we could go back and make them put in the containment system.
And okay. The other question that was asked, even though it's existing bamboo, we can retroactively go back and enforce how that bamboo should now be planted?
That's correct. There is no grandfathering under the property maintenance code.
Okay.
So how your property is maintained, you have to always comply with the most current regulations if we have an action against you. Unlike the regulation in the UDC, which is a zoning matter that does have grandfathering, which says you can't now plant an invasive species in Appendix 3 of the UDC, which bamboo is included in that list. If it predates the adoption of the UDC, it would have been legal at that time to plant it. However, when you're talking about running bamboo as opposed to the clumping variety, this spreads extremely quickly, and within a matter of a couple of years, it could take over your property and your neighbor's property.
I own it, I know. So that's where we are. I know that Tim Sheldon is going to co-sponsor this. We both have issues within our districts, and this is the only thing that we could come up with as to how to start controlling it.
So I guess to be clear, I have a community that has a lot of bamboo. I went back there to look at some storm drainage. Councilwoman Diller will be getting it very soon.
Thank you for talking.
My co-sponsor.
you could probably raise pandas back there. I mean, there's a lot of bamboo. So what are we saying now? If it's on a neighboring property, that becomes a civil action that the neighbor would have to take against them, but now we would go in and tell the existing property owner, you have to put this barrier in so it couldn't spread anymore?
Jim Smith, Land Use, if a complaint is filed with the code enforcement group, we would go out to ensure that it is contained within that property. If not, we would make them put in the containment system to prevent it from spreading further. And then they would have to remove the portion that at least that property line backwards to have the containment system be along that property line. As far as any damage that's there, if it's a problem between the two, that would be a civil matter at that point. Now, two homeowners could agree. We don't proactively go out to look for everybody that may be in a violation of every provision of our code. If two neighbors back up to each other and they want to have a solid barrier there, you know, as long as we don't get any complaints from Newcastle County, that would be appropriate for them to keep the buffer that they've always had between the properties. But if it gets to the point where one property owner is troubled by the bamboo that, and they file a complaint, then we would get involved.
And how would you... I had a homeowner a while ago that I dealt with, and she was telling me, you can't even pour Roundup on this stuff. You just can't kill it.
It's very difficult. There is a very specific procedure how to do it. Roundup is part of it. They also have salts. you have to cut it down, which is pretty much what our code currently talks about. It takes the energy out of the plant, but you also have to cut it in a certain way where there are little nodules on the bamboo. You have to cut it right at the nodule, and then you've got about 15 seconds to put on an improved salt and Roundup type solution. And that's how you kill the plants. And it takes a while. This is not an easy plant. It's a highly invasive species. The running bamboo is a highly invasive species.
And this is a process that you will provide to the homeowner when you cite them, that, you know, here's how you would get rid of it?
Well, they'll just go to a landscaping company their websites, Home Depot and others that tell how to do it. We would just require that they do it. We wouldn't mandate how they get it done. It's just you would have to eradicate and then install the barrier.
And what about somebody that's selling a house that has bamboo in it? How are you going to... And they buy the house not knowing that this is a violation, and then later they get slapped with the violation.
That's with any violation today. When you buy a property, you inherit any violations that exist on that property. You may have, you know, possibly if this becomes a law, it's already a state law. So, you know, arguably, maybe they should already be disclosing it on their real estate disclosure form.
Maybe we should put that on there. I have Councilman Wander and Councilman Smiley.
Thank you. A couple questions and comments. On Route 52, probably on DelDOT's property, 82, in Yorkland, on the east bank of the Red Clay Creek, there is an intersection just before you cross the bridge where people can't turn from the side road and see around it because the bamboo is so thick. I think you may know that corner. Part of that's on DelDOT. Part of that's probably on private property. DelDOT's authority would extend both on DelDOT's land and the private property if a complaint was filed on that corner.
We don't tend to cite other agencies, though, do we?
We can't. We can't talk to them. But if it's a state law, why wouldn't DelDOT be complying?
I think it's one that I think it's one that came from the private property and just went over. Mm-hmm. I mean, at some point, if it acts like any of the other bamboo that I've seen, it's going to come up through the road.
Uh-huh.
And then somebody will probably have to do something.
Mm-hmm. And DelDOT has authority. So if it's inhibiting the free flow and safe flow of traffic, they can take action.
So we can ask our good friends in the state legislature to ask that it be enforced.
Well, just if it's a visual, if it's a sight distance issue, you can ask that it be taken down by DelDOT.
Mm-hmm. And just on the civil action, the measure of damages, I mean, it's obviously a legal issue, but it would be if you mitigated it, in other words, you took it out yourself, mm-hmm. and then sued for that cost, that would be a measure of damages.
At least one.
At least one. There may be other consequential damages as well.
Replacing your drive.
Councilman Smiley?
Mm-hmm. Curious. You mentioned if two homeowners backing up to each other, what they had this buffer. Is there anything that they could legally do that would protect the properties, one to the other, from code violation notices or anything else? Where I'm going with this is, John and Bob agree to let it grow. 10 years down the road, Bob sells his home. Billy doesn't like it. And it came from, you know, the other side. Could they enter into an illegal agreement that we... So, point being, you really shouldn't do it.
Right.
Okay, that's where I wanted to go, because down the road I go to sell my house, and then they come in, well, now, you know, I'd agree. I mean, we get this with fences and everything else all the time, where people have been neighbors for years. Somebody passes away or moves or sells the house, and the other one comes in and says, I don't care how long you were here. Your fence is 6 inches on my property. You had an agreement. But that's not binding on me. You've got to move it. That would be the same thing here.
That's correct. Correct.
Okay.
I have one of those too.
Additional questions, members of council? Any questions for the members of the public? Councilman Cartier.
Are you going to other?
Next.
Thank you.
I have something I want to bring up under other.
Okay, moving to other. Councilman Cartier?
Yes, thank you. Members of council, I wanted to review through a YouTube presentation that Jim Boyle, our policy director, has very courteously researched for me. We had a fire disaster in the 8th District in the community of Ballymead. Ballymead is a mixture of single family and townhomes. On December 19th, we had a very serious fire disaster that was captured by some area residents through the YouTube site. And I wanted members of council, I know that we had a very vigorous, robust debate about sprinklers and residential development, and I wanted members of council to actually view the results of a very serious fire incident in a dense townhome community where we have a whole block of townhomes that have been evacuated. We've had four that are pretty destroyed, and I just wanted you to look at this. This has a density of probably 10 to 12 units an acre.
That's our house.
These houses go for about $350,000. There was a lot of wind that day. The unit that's burning fiercely is the end unit on a block. It affected the adjacent end unit and interior to that as well because of the wind that you're seeing play on this. And I just wanted members of council to see a light construction type building under fire to see, you know, what can happen. This incident also had a mayday from a Claymont firefighter. Fortunately, he was not in any life-threatening situation, but a pretty serious event that happened.
This house is on fire. He's starting to go.
The block of townhomes where the fire started has no electrical power. Everybody had to be evacuated from those buildings in the original block. This goes on for 5 minutes. I don't know if we want to go through the whole thing. Yes.
Did they not have sprinklers? Because
no sprinklers. No.
But there are how many units in a...
Does that make any difference?
No sprinklers. These units were built in the mid-1990s. Yeah. You want to go to the Ballymead fire? That one just shows you the result of the. Members of council, if you go on YouTube, just type in Ballymead and you can study all these videos. I really urge you to do that because it's a real education about, you know, real fire event and what can happen. What they're doing is they're playing water on a unit that completely collapsed. That's where the fire was. It completely collapsed, burned two cars. Fortunately, we had no loss of life here, very fortunately. What you're looking at, when you look past where they're playing the water, that's an adjacent block end unit that was burned because of the wind action, and it affected the attic spaces above and going into the adjacent unit there. So we have about, I think, four units that are really, one is total, the other ones are very heavily damaged.
That one
land.
If you get a chance, I would go look at that and get an appreciation for, you know, what can happen. These very dense residential townhome communities where you have, you know, fire, real fire take place, and the kind of damage and threat to life and property that goes on.
Anyone have anything under other?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I just want to take the opportunity. Peggy is here this afternoon, our League of Women Voters in Newcastle County. I had the opportunity to participate in a public forum on the plan of Whitehall, and I think, Peggy, what were probably 50, 60 residents from the area, the MOT area, that attended, and it was just want to extend my appreciation as a district council person for the Women League of Women Voters for putting that on. And like I say, it was very well attended, a lot of good questions, a lot of good information disseminated. So tip of the hat to Peggy for doing that.
Anybody have any? Councilman Co-Chair Renner?
I'd just like to make comment. Appreciate Councilman Cartier for bringing that to the attention of the council.
Anything under public comment?
My name is Peggy Fish, and I live in the Pine Creek Valley area. And I would like to suggest to council that they might want to think of an alternative word to workforce housing. It has such a bad kind of sense about it. I mean, you picture in your mind kind of grubby people, you know, just who don't take care of their bodies and their yards and everything. It has really kind of a nasty sense. And I wonder if we might want to think of something like emerging professional, but housing. But I don't think workforce housing is, you know, it's used in such a negative way. I mean, my family are workers, and so I don't think there's anything disgraceful at all about being a working person, but it's used badly by people who oppose the concept in their own areas.
Thank you. Councilman Smiley?
I don't want to be redundant, but I'll just comment that the reason workforce housing has such a negative connotation is because of those people that oppose it, that have attached a negative connotation to it. And I'll repeat what I've said from day one. Anybody that researches the issue, the homes involved in workforce housing sell for more than the home I live in right now. Right? And I see nothing negative about the term work. Unfortunately, I got more unemployed housing in my district than I have workforce housing. So I would love to have workforce housing. At least that means people have jobs. So the negative connotation, it was brought there by those, and they're going to oppose it. I don't care what you put on it, because if you put professional housing, they're going to say they make too much money and they should be taxed more so they can't afford the houses. So I appreciate your position, but unfortunately, those that don't agree will never agree.
Councilman Weiner.
Yeah, I second the comments of Councilman Smiley, and would like to add that I applaud the administration, Culver, General Manager Culver has explained we're going to rework the term in the draft comp plan. It's going to have a different nomenclature.
David Culver, under the comprehensive plan, we're calling it traditional neighborhood housing. But that kind of mirrors what we traditionally built in Newcastle County.
I think that's a good term for it.
And I have nothing against traditional people.
But there are those that will.
Councilman Street.
I just want everybody to know those grubby, scrungy